Today we join the Super Bowl frenzy on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Games seem to be our preoccupation. Writing about them is Mark Nessler's, and Garrison Keillor continues to be occupied with the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. Mark, has the Super Bowl become our national holiday, surpassing all others?
I believe so. If it wasn't on a Sunday, I think that we just everyone would stay home. I mean, it's one of the largest, if not the largest, spectacle in sports and in television. It's just, I mean, people watch it mainly sometimes for just the commercials, but the outcome in the sports world, the outcome is a big deal. And this one's got a lot of particular interest.
In what way?
Well, you got Bill Belichick, you got Tom Brady, and you got the commissioner, Goodell, and you got Deflategate of a couple years ago where they accused and found guilty the quarterback, Brady, of deflating the ball. Well, if they win, guess who has to hand the trophy over to the Patriots and their owner? And if he gets the MVP, guess who has to hand the trophy over to Tom Brady, the guy that he found guilty of taking air out of the football?
So I think he'll be rooting for the Atlanta Falcons.
He just might. He just might. And then you have the Falcons. You know, the Patriots are going for their fifth Super Bowl. The Falcons are looking for their first win. They lost in Super Bowl 33, so it's been – this is the 51st, so 18 years ago, and they lost. And so everybody loves an underdog. And the Falcons, they can put a lot of points up on the board. The Patriots can put a lot of points up on the board. It's the highest over-under in Super Bowl history of 58, I think 58 and a half. Huh. So really, I mean, it could be one of the most entertaining Super Bowls ever if you go along with what the, you know, what Vegas thinks.
How did you get into this business?
How did I get into this business? Well, when I was in high school, I used to keep score of basketball games for Murray and Nolan Hurt. They would write the stories. I was a math person. I was a statistics person, and I would go to the games and keep score for them and hand the book to them to take to the office and write the stories. But one game, it was Don Morris's. It was a landmark, maybe his 400th career victory, where Nolan had car trouble, and he wasn't there for the game, and I'm panicking because he's got the book, he's got all the and so I figure, what can I do? And so that was back when they sold these popcorns and megaphones. If you remember back in those days, you didn't go to the concession stands; they actually had people hawking these megaphones with popcorn. And I saw the person down one floor, one level below at Rock Island Fieldhouse, went down, spent my quarter on a popcorn, went back up to the press box up high, dumped the popcorn on the floor of the press box, and used that as my scorecard. And imagine interviewing the great Don Morris after the game using a popcorn box as your notepad. I was just a little bit, but that was my very first byline ever, and so that was the start of my journalistic career.
So did that make you want to be a journalist, or had you always wanted to be?
Well, you know what? My dad, who passed away last August, always told me that when I was a kid, I'd always go out and get the paper right off the bat, go to sports, and that I told him that one day I was going to be a sports editor, not a sports writer. I told him I was going to be a sports editor, and son of a gun, if that didn't come true, which I didn't even, he remembered. I sure didn't. I was probably 8 or 9. But yeah, and I've always loved writing. I've always loved numbers, and sports is all about numbers. But the more I got into writing, and Murray Hurt was a huge person in my life that steered me toward what I do now.
He's helped several people we've talked to.
Oh, Murray.
Murray's
and Nolan.
He's a legend.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's a wonderful guy. I would staple his copy to the desk on TV, but he was a wonderful guy. Yeah, it's from a writer to an editor, how does that happen?
They combined the Argus and the Dispatch. I think in 1990, 1990 maybe. I can't remember how long. In 1994, I became the sports editor. I do know that.
I think it was 86.
It might have been 86.
Well, that's when Rob Small bought the Argus.
Okay, well, that would have been it. And then for 7 years, Jim Meenan and I, he was the sports editor. I was the associate sports editor, it was called. And then he left, and I took over, and the rest is 23 years of sports editor history. I can't even believe I'm saying that number.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, time runs away from you.
Yes.
I remember 86 because that's when Rob Small called me, and I said, how's the Quad Cities Rupert Murdoch? He said, how's the Quad Cities, I forget what columnist he mentioned. And I said, oh, no, not me. Not me. A week later, I said yes.
He said yes. See, he has that way.
I've been waiting to ask you a couple of questions, the first one of which is, how do you are able to write as fast as you write to get that copy in?
I just think I'm blessed. I mean, bottom line, I don't know how I do it either, quite frankly. And a lot of people will tell you they
don't. Do you just start writing?
Writing. I just have a thought. You know, the biggest part is getting the lead paragraph, the first paragraph. Once you get that, it's just like, it just flows. And it's like, you know,
You don't even have all that time. You know, it takes me
three
days to get an opening paragraph.
We sometimes have 15 minutes to write 15 inches of copy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a gift. It really is.
Okay. And the second question is nothing is more rife with cliches than sports.
And I'm taking this
one game at a time.
I hate those.
But how do you avoid them? Rapidly as you do.
You have to remember them. And what was the Major League? Was that the movie that take them one game at a time?
Yeah.
Bull Durham. That was it. Yeah. Bull Durham.
Yeah.
I often think during summer baseball season, Bull Durham, you remember that movie and say, don't use that. Don't use that. And the beautiful thing is Murray Hurt preached to me and I preached to my writers. Don't use cliches. The newspaper isn't a place for those. And so, yeah, we have a whip in the corner and we give them a whipping when they, I'm just kidding, of course, but we do, if they use them, we remind them my writers know that a cliche
is it seems to me it's hard to avoid them. If a guy takes a shot from half court, there aren't too many ways of saying it's from clear downtown Rock Island.
Yeah, right? Yep, exactly. But it's easier to say it than it is to write it. I mean, if you're at a game, if you're on radio or doing a broadcast, you know, the announcers for the Super Bowl this week, you know, on Sunday are probably going to use a lot of those. And it's just, you know, unavoidable because that's what people are used to. They're what they're used to, and if they say it, it's no big deal. But if you write it, it's a different animal because you know you're just geared toward not using cliches in your copy.
Someone once said that writing about rock music is like writing for sports. There's really not much to write about, so you have to be creative.
Ooh, that one's pretty good. I mean, I'm a country music fan now, and I'm all about the country lyrics. So, you know, and you can't write about beer and trucks really in sports. So, here's what I tell my staff. When they come into the office from a game, I want to listen to what they first tell me when they come in. Because I want to see that in their lead. And the example I use is the fact of it was a girls' basketball game, and the undefeated team was playing the team with no wins at all. And I actually covered that game, and I'm thinking at the end, you know, what in the world am I going to write about? I mean, the game's almost over, and I still don't have an angle. Because as the game's going on, you're thinking of an angle.
Right.
You're always – or you're waiting for a quote from the coach. You hope that doesn't come down to that. But in this particular game, it was lopsided as expected. And the losing team put in a freshman for the first time. And she goes in to check out, and she takes off her warm-up, but she didn't have a warm-up on.
Oh.
And so the coach calls a quick timeout, gets a quick huddle. I might have been one of the three or four people that actually saw what happened. And so that, and you know what? If I got back to the office, that's certainly one of the first things I'd tell them. So my story really geared on you never know what to expect, even when you expect, you know, an outcome like that. And I had to play with the words, and you want to keep names out because you don't want to embarrass the person. But, you know, it turned out to be a pretty, you know, interesting lead and a good angle into the story.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite sport to write about and a least favorite?
Wow. You know, well, football gets too cold. I mean, I'm getting to the age where I'll cover games in September, but when it gets to playoff football in November, I'm saying, you know what, we got younger guys out there that you know, I'm ready for Florida, and there's no football like Florida in Illinois. I like the pace of basketball just because I'm that statistics nut that can keep all the statistics going on, and there might be three or four shot misses in a row and three or four rebounds, and I'm keeping all their uniform numbers in my head. So when the ball goes to the other team, I can really jot down quickly who had those statistics. So I'm really adept at basketball, but baseball is my heart and soul favorite sport. It's my favorite one to cover. It's the one that I've loved since I was a kid. And any opportunity I have to write about it, if I could be a beat writer for the Cardinals, I think I'd be in heaven.
What is there about baseball?
I think it was the way I was raised. My dad, you know, was my little league coach. Super Bates and Jim Brayett were my eight year old t-shirt ball coaches. And it's something when you're geared toward that at a young age and you keep that throughout the years, it just, you know, it gets ingrained in you. And then when I become a writer, it's all still there. And it's what I know, you know, and it's all about coming up with, as a writer, it's coming up with angles. And to me, there's just so many angles in baseball. I mean, it's one of the most complex yet simple games that there is.
Well, I can give you the answer. It is called the American game because it personifies the country. Individual effort within a collective.
Yep.
A team plays together, but individuals count. It's an individual effort.
You can't go into a four corners in baseball.
Yeah.
You can't run the clock down like you can in football. You got to play the game.
I heard an interesting thing about baseball is that it's the only sport that has the possibility of becoming mythic. Theoretically, a game could go on forever, right?
And one case,
if you were could hit a ball enough, it could go out into orbit and stay out there.
Jeff Schneider, who's from he went to Allman, graduated right. from Allman, from Rock Island. He played in a 33 inning game. That covered the span of 2 days. They played like till 2 or 3 in the morning, came back the next afternoon to finish
yeah.
it. So, and he yeah. pitched in that game. So he's a part of that
right.
beautiful kind of history. But yeah, I mean, and if you watch The Natural, I think a ball did get hit into orbit. that's right. probably my yeah. favorite movie is The yeah. Natural and Roy Hobbs. And
yeah.
And yep.
That's that is a wonderful movie. It changes the original story because in the original story he fails.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but that's not what people want to
right.
see in the movie.
Can you imagine that movie if if Roy Hobbs didn't hit the game-winning home run?
Didn't knock out all the lights.
Yeah, knock out the lights and hit the cover off the ball. Hit the cover off the ball
right.
roll. There you go.
Right.
See?
But our obsession with games... I've been thinking about this, that you go as far back as you go, men have been playing games. Sometimes I think as a substitute for war, because there's this...
Or a substitute for life, for yeah, that right. matter. I mean, you know, it doesn't take a great number of riches to play a game in the street.
Right.
I mean, I grew up 8th Street, 19th Avenue, we played stickball. Mm-hmm. And if you hit it over the fence at Mrs. Martin's yard, you had to go get it. Because she was a crabby old woman, God mm-hmm. rest her soul, but you didn't want to hit a home run. But yeah, you're right. Anybody can play a game.
Yeah.
Just get a bunch of kids together, and the higher you go, obviously,
but
the more difficult it is.
That seems to be one of our principles for men, especially, and recently for women,
mm-hmm.
this this concentration on playing games and seeing who can win.
Right.
And it's just part of our hormonal structure, I think.
Maybe that's, you should talk to my wife, Don, because maybe that's why she says I always have to win. Every argument, every, you know, restaurant choice.
Men are like that.
Yeah.
That's
and whole... maybe it's because I'm a sports guy.
No, it's because you're male.
Well, but more and more, there's more female sports, girl yeah. sports to cover. I mean, and I actually enjoy covering them. So oftentimes, more. I love softball more than baseball for high schools. And with Bree Beal at Rock, I don't know. I thought it was because they were faster,
yeah.
and I could get done quicker, and I could, you know, have time, you know. But that's no longer the case because baseball high school games are now, like, softball could be done in an hour, but now it's not anymore. I don't know. I have no. Maybe it's because they moved the mound back, and there aren't as many strikeouts, so the quick innings aren't there anymore. 9 pitches and the inning's over, but. But girls basketball with Bree Beal and Kristen Carr, that's exciting.
Yeah, that has got to be.
And that's, you know, they have a good chance to – it's going to be interesting. So, you know, just high school girls sports is on the rise.
But before we leave, who's going to win tomorrow?
Who's going to win? Well, I'll tell you what.
It's a Nest guess.
It is a Nest guess. I love it. It's a Nest guess. Can you believe I've been doing that for 33 years? Who's going to win? You know, I can't find a single good reason for the Patriots not to win, except this game is in Houston, okay? The game's in Houston. New England played in Houston in 2004 against the Carolina Panthers, and I was in Vegas for that Super Bowl. I placed 7 bets, 7 $50 bets, okay? I lost every single one of the, I didn't win one. If I win one bet, I might get my money back. But listen to this. I bet on the kicker, the New England kicker, to score over 8 points. And I either missed 1 or 2 field goals or he missed 1 or 2 extra points. I can't remember which. But he ended up with 8 points. Unbelievable. I bet on Jake Delhomme, the quarterback for the Panthers, to score to have under 200 yards passing. And at halftime, this is absolutely, he had 1 yard passing. And I had already figured out that, you know what, I don't need to win another bet. I could win this bet. And I've already got this one in the bank. Now everything's gravy. I was, you know, buying drinks for my friends, saying, you know, this one, he ended up with 233 yards. I said, are you kidding? I bet on the Patriots to cover because the favorite has won. There's never been a favorite that hasn't. If a favorite wins, it's going to win. It's never going to win and not cover, except 6 times. Guess which was one of those 6 times? 2004 was one of those times, and it was the Patriots by 3, and I think the Panthers were getting like 3.5.
Okay, we're out of time. Who's going to win?
I'm going to go with the Patriots because 6, 7 of the last 8 Super Bowls have been won by the team wearing the white jerseys, and I can think of nothing more analytical than betting on a team because of its jersey.
Well,
Patriots.
I'm pulling for the Falcons.
There you go. Well, you know what? If the Falcons sent me to Vegas, they would win.
Okay. And that's our winning guest for our next guest for today. And now that we've talked to Mark Nestler, we're going to listen to our good friend Garrison Keillor. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Now to the book bag, and I've got one. This is an extraordinary book by an extraordinary man, Peter Godfrey Smith. He's a man who's into philosophy, the philosophy of biology and also of straight philosophy. But he's also a scuba diver, and he has written a book about the octopus. It's called The Octopus, the Sea, and the Deep Origins of Consciousness. When I was a kid and watched those nature films by Cousteau, the octopus presented itself as one of the most interesting creatures alive. It could do anything. It could fold into a very narrow opening. It could stiffen its arms like stilts.
Change color.
Change skin texture, and do it in the blink of an eye. Then when they take him into the laboratory to do experiments, they find those things can do. They can get out of their aquarium, go over and do something, and come back. There was one, a demonstration of how an octopus has a personality, believe it or not. When the scuba divers are traveling around checking them, they make friends with some of them. They come out to greet them. Others are very shy. They stay away from them. And one, during an experiment, broke the equipment rather than go through it. A very irascible octopus.
Right.
But the whole question, and that's what interests him, is what do we mean by a mind?
And well, isn't it true that the octopus comes from a biological line that completely different from humans?
Yeah.
So the whole idea of brain and thinking.
And eyes.
And eyes.
Yeah. They say if you want an example of what it might be like to meet an alien, talk to an octopus. And they have developed, people are a little leery about calling it awareness, consciousness, or even intelligence. But boy, it sure looks like it. And their mind is distributed all over their body. They have something like 500 million neurons, which is ahead of some mammals, nowhere near the number than a human's brain, but they're distributed into their arms. There are no bones in an octopus. There's a little cartilage to protect the brain, but that's it. And yet, somehow, with a scattered brain over their whole body, they have what looks very much like intelligence.
Well, they must be able to coordinate those brains.
Boy, do they. They can do anything. They can roll up an arm, stretch it out. What amazes me is reading about how they stiffen those arms, almost like stilts or legs or something. They have such amazing control of their bodies, but it's the way they behave that is so remarkable.
The reviews that make me want to read it raise that question of, we used to think that animals couldn't think. Obviously, you know, a dog doesn't really miss you. It's just a creature of habit. So when you're not there, it can't even think about you.
I don't know about that.
No.
I'm not convinced.
You know, we thought back in the 60s, Isaac Asimov, the science fiction writer who ought to know better, wrote an article in Playboy in which he said that a new dark age is coming because soon we'll know everything there is to know about everything. We'll reach the edge of the universe with telescopes. We'll know all there is to know about biology of animals. He was somewhat premature.
Boy, was he. Yeah, because that opens another interesting philosophical question, that since we are of the Earth, we came from the Earth, maybe we can't know more than the Earth contains. Well, maybe our thinking is limited in a way we don't understand. The book is Other Minds, The Octopus, the Sea, and the Deep Origins of Consciousness by Peter Godfrey Smith. It will be one of the most intriguing things you have ever read. And we recommend that you join Roel and I again next week when we come back for another edition of Scribble.